For logbook servicing you can rely on, you need to make the right choice. You need trained professionals who are fully qualified to service your car according to manufacturer's specifications. For real peace of mind and a nationwide warranty, book in or book online at repcoservice.com.
The T20 World Cup is coming to our shores in 2020, with the best of the best striving for the ultimate glory. Before that all kicks off, let's join Mel Jones as she chats to cricket royalty on Road to the T20 World Cup.
Road to the T20 World Cup goes back in time this week to the 2015 Men's World Cup and chats to Mitchell Starc about handling the pressure of a home World Cup, the form that led him to becoming the leading wicket taker and player of the tournament, the noise at the G before that first ball to Brendan McCullum in the final, and, most importantly, his support role in this Women's T20 World Cup. Mitch Starc, I never thought I'd interview in a hotel room in Mumbai where we cannot really see much out the window, but you're getting ready for first ODI against India tomorrow. How's everything going?
Yeah, it's going well. It's been a quick transition for a few of us from Test summer straight over here for a quick ODI series. So, yeah, once we start tomorrow, it's all pretty much done and dusted in about a week. So it's a quick fire series. Obviously, always exciting. India, Australia, a big challenge playing away from home. But after the boys were here roughly 12 months ago and had that come from behind series win, excitement's high, spirits are really high, and then hopefully it's going to be a really exciting series.
This this podcast, Road to the T20 World Cup, is all about the Women's World Cup coming up next month, but also this year is the men's as well. I'd love to... We're going to chat all things 2015, because I think one of the biggest things for teams to win a World Cup is winning one at home and just handling all the sense of expectation. We're going to go back a little bit to start with. I'm going to ask you, and I've given you no warning, so it'll be interesting to see what you come up with here, your favourite sporting memory. And it can be absolutely anything. It doesn't have to be cricket. Doesn't have to be a match you've played in. But something that springs to mind that... either gets you really excited or emotional?
Yeah, it's a good question. Well, obviously, love cricket as a kid. So whether it be, you know, sit down on Boxing Day and watch the Boxing Day test or something like that. But I'd fondly remember the 99 World Cup, just something that we reflected on before the most recent World Cup being in England as well. And just the images of the team winning the World Cup and on the balcony at Lord's, and you know, Steve Waugh was a hero of mine growing up, and then I've been fortunate enough through cricket to get to know him and meet him and tour with him as well. So I think that's one that automatically comes to mind as a kid. I guess I've had a lot of personal sporting highlights over the last sort of 10 years, but and then to share some with Elisa as well and be around for a couple of her World Cup wins, which she won't let me forget.
she leads that race as well. Yeah, there's a little bit of a little counter going on at the moment, isn't she? She's ahead.
Oh, very lopsided. Yeah. Anyway, but and then I thoroughly enjoy my golf. So watching, I watch a lot of it on tour and at home, and so something like all the hype around Tiger Woods, latest one. So look, I love my sport. A lot of personal highlights that sure I'll reflect on once I'm done with cricket, but I think that 99 World Cup for me was one that probably more significant, as we were in England for the World Cup last year and trying to emulate that with our squad. And then a little sidetrack there is we get to wear that uniform later on this summer, that's exciting. Hopefully get to pull that on as well.
Your family is exceptionally talented across the board. You've got two sisters, one in interior design, I was chatting to your dad at the Boxing Day test. Another one who does marine biology, working with seahorses, which I think, didn't Alyssa want to be a marine biologist at one stage?
Well, they did the same course at the same uni.
Oh, really?
My sister started, I think, 3 years after Alyssa.
Yep.
I've been younger. She's finished and is now in practice, I guess you'd say. Mm-hmm. Alyssa hasn't quite finished.
Right. So she's still technically enrolled in the course?
I don't think she is anymore.
Okay, they've gone.
She's quite past the time limit. Okay. So it's something she's still interested in, I think. But obviously with the on the good side of it, cricket's got the schedule's gotten busier for the girls. Yep. She's touring more, playing more, which is what they're after, and it's great for the women's side of the game. But it's affected her studies, unfortunately.
Okay, so two exceptionally talented sisters on their career front. Your brother Brandon is an Olympic athlete, high jumper, and a gold medalist at the Com Games, and yourself. Was it a competitive household growing up?
Yeah, I was the oldest too, so I got the run of the mill. the biggest and the oldest. But yeah, I guess my brother and I were always heavy on the sports. Dad played a bit. I think he played underage baseball for New South Wales long before we came along.
Yep.
But he always played senior cricket with the junior club I was at. Always was my first cricket coach. Was secretary of the club, heavily involved. Yeah. Brother had a crack at cricket for a while there, but athletics is one he loved a lot. And obviously,
what did he do when he was playing cricket?
Well, Dad was the coach of the team at sort of the early doors. And we had too many kids for one team, not enough for two. So another father at one of the boys at the cricket club took one team, and we always ended up with sort of 7, 8, 9 players each week. Right. So Brandon actually filled in a lot for a team that was 4 years or whatever it is above his age group. So yeah, we had some interesting partnerships there when he'd sort of come in at the end as a really young guy, and then we'd knock a few runs around. But yeah, he had a crack at his own age group for a bit there.
Yeah.
He's a bit taller like me, so he had a bit of a crack at bowling, and he was doing little athletics as well, and that's one that took his interest a bit more. And well, it's been a good choice because he's gone on to
certainly has been
games and then a Com Games gold. So hopefully he's in for a big Olympic year this year as well.
We're going to fast forward a little bit because I know we don't have heaps of time. But you go through age group cricket. You debut for Australia. Richie Beno presents you your baggy green cap. What were your memories of that? Did he say much?
He couldn't find me in the circle, so that was
don't
an interesting
take that
one.
To heart.
No, it was a bit of humour there, but. We actually played a one-day series against Sri Lanka prior to that, and I was on a flight home from Brisbane and I was actually sitting next to him. So it was we had a bit of a chat about cricket, a bit about the series. Just he said he'd seen me play a little bit and had a few words there and mentioned that in the cap presentation as well. So yeah, it's something that I'll never forget is that the presentation, getting my bag of green from the great man Richie Beno. The rest of the day was a bit of a blur. I don't think I said too much, and Usman Khawaja actually likes giving me stick for that because I was pretty quiet till about an hour before stumps on day one. So luckily got the first over out of the way. Yeah. Was fortunate to get a couple of wickets. Probably not the best balls I've ever bowled, but yeah, it's nice to get on the board. And we had a great week there. We had a good win. It was a bit of a changing time for Australian cricket. We had a new coach, Mickey Arthur, was his first test. James Paterson, David Warner and I all debuted the same game.
Yeah, that's right.
So it was a bit of a changing game for the group and we had a win, so it was a good week.
Do you, when you then got the call up to present Taylor Villamek with her baggy green during the recent Ashes in England, did you think about when you got presented yours and how important it was, the memories of you getting your cap and how important the actual act of giving someone theirs is?
Yeah, not only that one, but having been around and seen a few in my time now, they're always very special. They're moments.
Who's
that...
Who's the best one?
Oh, the best one that I've seen have to be... it was Mitchell Marsh being presented by his dad.
Yeah.
That was pretty special.
Emotional.
Brought a few guys to tears almost. So it's and then actually Nathan Lyon giving Travis Head his was probably as emotional as I've seen Nathan Lyon as well. So they're special moments. Mm. And yeah, whether it's your own or you've seen them happen, that it's the player receiving it and giving it out, remember those for a long time. So we were actually in the middle of the World Cup and I was more nervous presenting the cap than any game of the World Cup. So obviously Dan Christian and Belinda Clark presented caps as well. Yeah, DC and I had a beer the night before.
he was sweating bullets, he said.
Yeah, we were both pretty nervous. So we managed to spit a few words out the girls had a good week. Unfortunately, it wasn't a result in the game, but yeah, fantastic memories for the girls and for us for me personally to present a cap was a big honour, yeah.
Yeah, it was by far the best cap presentation I've ever seen. I think because also there was the three as well and it just matched up so nicely, so... Yeah. Blinda to Sophie Molyneux, yourself to Tay, and then DC to Ash Gardner. It was nice. Okay, we're going to chat all things 2015 World Cup. Not too many teams win home World Cups, and I guess it's because of the pressure associated with it all. When you were leading into that World Cup, how much of that was spoken about and how far out?
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't really remember too much chat around the pressures of it. We had the tri series right before it, so we played India and England at home right before the World Cup. So we sort of saw that as the perfect lead-in. We wanted to really be settled in our team, some of our tactics. Obviously, a couple of teams that were strong cricket teams that were coming up against throughout the World Cup. So a good chance to see where we stood, sort of in the pecking order, and try and implement some game plans that we wanted to take in. So that was really successful for us, that tri series. We won that one as well, so it really put us in a good place and take some momentum into the World Cup. Probably something that we reflected on from that in the most recent World Cup was probably some of the pressures that England would have been under playing at home, and some of the things we felt through our World Cup at home. So probably nothing that we not big things that we spoke about at the time of the 15 World Cup, but things were reflected on, I think.
You spoke about game plans as well. Is it, and this might go across all the World Cups and tournaments you've played in, is it hard to stick to game plans when things don't go quite right at the start?
Yeah, I think that's where the adapting comes into it, and we speak a lot about that now as well, especially playing away from home where conditions are quite foreign to the away teams, obviously. And you need to be the team that adapts the best and the quickest to be ahead of the game or to win games. So playing at home was a big advantage. There was probably the pressures of the expectation of being best suited to your home conditions. But yeah, when things don't go to plan or certain bowling plans or batting plans don't come off, you need to... That's where teams that hold their nerve and have the ability to adjust and adapt quick can still salvage things or get themselves back into the game and in positions where they can still be very competitive.
Social media coming into that World Cup? You're not on social media anyway, which is probably one of the big differences between you and Midge. Because she's on it and she likes bombs. To clip people. Yeah.
She likes to put things out there and see how it goes. So
now, you don't see it. You can probably only see it off her account. Do you go, what the?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
It's funny. I hear a lot of things. If I have to do media, I've heard that she's put things out there. So I don't really know much about it. So
It's obviously been a conscious thought for you not to go on social media. Do you think it helps, particularly around big tournaments like this? I know the England women during the 2017 World Cup in England, the majority of them got off social media for it all.
Yeah, I think I've been off it now for a bit more than a year. So that was, I think that's been a really positive thing for me. I didn't find that there were too many positives for me on there. And it was a lot of... It's very fake, I found. So,
Are you saying that the comments made there were more negative than positive, or that there could be one negative out of 20 positives? But it's just.
Yeah, I think.
We always take things
more out. I just didn't think there was, for me personally, I think there was a need to be on there, reading things that I didn't need to read or opinions that I didn't need to pay attention to. So I think that's helped me stay pretty level for the last sort of 12 to 13 months or whatever it's been. And certainly when things are going well and people want to read all that, then go for your life. But it swings pretty quickly the other way as well. So I feel like you're never as good as people say you are, never as bad as people say you are.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think personally it was a really positive move to get off it. And
yeah,
I haven't really paid too much attention since.
I think I might do the same thing. So then for Mitch, she sees it completely differently. I mean, she's probably in career best form at the moment as well, so there'd be a lot of positivity coming through on there.
She's it's a very different personality to me, I guess. She loves that have that interaction, I guess, and whether it be drop a bomb and see how it goes, or just you bite back at little things or try and get bites out.
Does she ever say to you, "Oh, I'm going to say this"?
She does, actually. Yeah. She goes, "Oh, she." I can see at times when she's writing things, and she thinks about doing it or not, and more often than not, she just pushes in. So,
regardless of what you say,
there's been a couple of times, but she's listened a couple of times. So, I'm not on there, so I don't have to worry about it. But she can. She's a big girl. She can deal with it.
She can on both accounts. Lots of chat. Justin Langer mentioned it in last year's World Cup. Everyone mentions it, that tournament style play is completely different to like a bilateral series or a tri series. What's the hardest part about tournament style?
That is a good question. It's something that Australia have been pretty strong at for a number of World Cups now. So we had a slight change of format for the most recent one where you did play every team.
Yep.
I guess in the 2015 World Cup, we didn't play someone like a South Africa, which were really strong. Mm. I think towards the back end, we felt that they were probably a team that matched up really closely with us and we're probably fortunate in a way not to have to play them.
Yeah.
Certainly not have to play them at Eden Park. They went nuts. Having played everyone in the World Cup, I think was an exciting sort of concept there as well. You sort of see how you match up to all the teams in the World Cup rather than just having to win your pool to get through to the next stage. So, sorry, what was the question again?
About tournament style. Tournament style.
You want to be playing your best cricket at the back end, but you've got to get to the back end.
Yeah.
So it isn't.
It's hard if you've got a really good team early doors.
Yeah. And then you're almost throwing, at times, you don't pay attention to it a lot at the start, but even run rate can come into it, which doesn't come into it in bilateral. So I think if you look back to our series here in India last year, where we were 2-0 down, and it was our grand final every game, and the boys managed to win 3-2. So. You can get really ahead of everyone else if you're really successful through the front end. And we this time around, we managed to play our worst cricket at the back end. So we felt like we were building nicely, but hadn't had our perfect game. And then obviously had a couple of stinkers at the back end, which can finish your tournament pretty quickly.
Yeah. I was just looking at the results from that 2015 World Cup. You yourself picked up 22 wickets. Player of the tournament. What was your form like coming into it? Were you feeling like top of the world and thinking it's coming out well?
I thought it was going pretty well through that tri series. I think I got rested at the back end. Played a lot of the games at the start. From memory, had a pretty heavy test summer. So I was just to freshen up at the back end of that tri series. We sort of knew our roles in the team. Everyone was pretty comfortable with how we were form-wise. I think Michael had a bit of a hamstring niggle at the start of the World Cup, where George Bailey captained the first game.
That's right,
And I don't think he played another game. So
so he's technically captained of a World Cup winning team.
But something that was noticeable from that World Cup to this one was the chat about the squad mentality. It doesn't take 11 players to win a World Cup. Quite often it takes a whole squad, which was certainly true of 2015. Everyone took part. And again, this time around, everyone took part and we sort of fell a bit short. So, but I think that's another aspect of tournament play is, you know, you play in different grounds, different teams, different matchups constantly. So that the squads can change pretty quickly and perhaps more so than in a bilateral where you're playing the same team.
So you've got to park your ego a little bit sometimes if you know that you're coming up against a team where there's probably maybe a better bowler matching up with a better
top. Absolutely, and it was probably most evident in our changes for the game against England at Lords where Jace came in and took Pfeiffer. We saw that as a really positive matchup between England, it's the left armers. Jace and I had a good day out there. We took... fortunately took 9 wickets between us and probably showed that the stats were true there, I guess. So, but that is tournament play, that's World Cup play where whether it be foreign conditions or matchups between certain countries, you do have to almost play that squad mentality all the time.
I know you're from New South Wales, but you'd see it in NRL, we certainly see it in AFL football, when you're leading up to the big dance, the final game at the MCG, and there's the grand final week and parades and all that sort of stuff. They always say it's just another game, but it's not.
Yeah, it's not.
So do you approach it? How do you embrace all the hype and white noise around something like that?
We're going back a lot now. The group was pretty confident, I think, without sounding arrogant or anything like that. I think only one or two of the Kiwis had ever played at the MCG before the World Cup.
Yep.
They played all their games in New Zealand on small grounds. We were coming to the MCG, which was almost double the size of some of the Kiwi grounds. Yeah. So yeah, we weren't arrogant, but we were pretty confident with where we stood in the matchups with New Zealand.
And that's even with the loss to them in the round
games. Yeah, we played Eden Park. That was, I think, one of the more exciting games of the World Cup.
It was a brilliant game. Was
all dominated, but you know, there were some really big scores throughout the World Cup. There were scores of 400. There were blokes scoring double hundreds, and that was one of the standout games. Was where ball dominated. So shows that bowlers can be exciting. but yeah, it was we had them on our turf, and yeah, it was a whirlwind sort of lead up. You didn't have too much time to think about it with the time between the semi-final and final, which is probably a good thing, because you shouldn't think about it too long. You worry about different scenarios, don't you? So, but yeah, we had a good preparation. We had some good games through the finals where we played some really good cricket. Guys were in good form. It was we were playing at home. It was, was almost ours to lose, but we really, really took on that challenge. And fortunately, we came outside with a good result, but it doesn't always happen that way.
I was there, and I can remember saying to myself, I'd never felt the MCG like that before. Like, you go to AFL Grand Finals, and you've been to big cricket matches before. But there was just certainly a different vibe, and I think a lot of it was the matchup between you and Brendan McCullum to kickstart it all. And there was just this real sense of anticipation. Do you remember standing at the top of your mark? Do you remember thinking,
pretty nervous,
there's something going
on
here?
I was taking some deep breaths. Yeah, I'd never played in front of that many people, certainly at home. At times it can sound like that many people in India or the South Continent, but I've never played in front of a Boxing Day crowd that big or any game that big. I hadn't been to an AFL Grand Final before then as well. So it was, certainly that the anticipation, the atmosphere, the nerves are around for both sides. Baz was probably the form player of the World Cup. Yeah. He'd been scoring pretty quickly.
Doesn't score any other way, does he?
No, he doesn't die wondering, does he? So, I think, and then Australia, New Zealand, two host nations. It was just meant to be for the two teams to make it to the World Cup, I think. It was the feeling around the start of the game, and certainly by the end, it was something that I think the whole group won't forget.
Yeah, we're going to take a very quick break after this question, but any advice to whoever wins this T20 World Cup at the MCG about celebrations at the G? How long do you stay at the G afterwards?
They're big change rooms, so you can fill a lot of people in. I think we were there till, we might have been there till 1 or 2 a.m. because we had all our families were there, so they'd popped in. Then the Kiwis popped in. We might have had, upwards of 150 people at one point in the change room. So time flies when you're having fun. We had to kick everyone out so we could sing the song, which we did out on the ground. So, we were there for a while. We were in our playing kit until the sun came up at the hotel. I think three guys didn't sleep. I'd had enough on the rooftop by sort of 5 or 6 a.m. and tapped Alicia on the shoulder and I said, I'm going to bed. I'm spent. So, and then we had a team function the next day out at Fed Square where we had the World Cup trophy out there with some of the fans in Melbourne. We had a little team function that afternoon with just the team and the staff and all our families. And then we were back home. Guys came over to the IPL. Guys went on holiday. Guys went to county cricket.
Right.
We sort of had
on with life.
Yeah, we had a few days. The guys, well, certainly the bowlers, Josh, Pat and I had a few days back in Sydney where we got together for a few days and just sat and reflected over a few cold cordials.
Nice. Okay. I'm going to find out your favourite cold cordial in this little very, very quick break. We're going to come back and chat to Mitch Stark a little bit more about this year's T20 World Cup.
On SEN, this is Road to the T20 World Cup with Mel Jones.
This is the world's longest break on Road to the T20 World Cup because we started in Mumbai. We're finishing this interview in Melbourne. Mitch Stark, this is all my fault. And I said to you, I was a little bit nervous about my recording capabilities and they failed massively. So thank you for your time. I did jinx it, didn't I? We have had a long break. You've played the one-day series over in India. You're now back almost following. Are you like a groupie for the Australian women's cricket team these days?
Yeah, I must be. I'm the only one following at the minute. So
We had a few parents around, but yeah, I was just a hanger-oner at the minute, a golf partner and driver by the sounds of it. So it's all good fun.
Speaking of golf, you played the other day at 13th Beach in a pretty impressive group of players as well in the Vic Pro-Am.
Yeah, I managed to get a gig this time. Last year I was carrying the bag, so...
Upgraded.
Got the upgrade. Yeah, Elisa actually played the Australian Open Pro-Am with Kari Webb last year. And I had to carry the bag for her. So I was raking bunkers and handing out clubs and not offering too much advice. And we pretty much played in the same group. So played with Kari this year again. I managed to get a gig playing. Elisa played and Stacey Peters, who the previous winner at the Vic Open, she joined in as well. So it was a pretty enjoyable group to play in. And yeah, lovely course down there at 13th Beach. So it was a really good day and would have been nice to hang around and watch a bit of golf, but I'm still doing a bit of training and watching the girls go about their business in the tri-series. So it's been a good week so far.
So your upgrade to playing rather than carrying the bag, is that due to the fact that your form in the Steely Cup has been impressive so far?
Well, it's won a piece this year, current holder of it, so maybe, but I think the fact that my pec was still in one piece as opposed to last year was probably a little bit to do with it.
Explain the Steely Cup for us, because it's obviously the amalgamation of Stark and Healy into this golfing trophy. How long has it been going for?
Yeah, it's so this will be the fourth year that's been going. So both enjoy our golf. It's an escape for us from cricket. I find it really relaxing.
The only person ever to say golf is relaxing. You don't get frustrated?
No, I don't. I used to, but I'm not on the tour. I'm not paid to play golf. I thoroughly enjoy hitting golf balls, just walking around 18 holes and getting away from cricket. So for me, I find it really relaxing, whether I'm shanking them or hitting them 300 down the middle. So the fact I can do that with Elisa as well, away from cricket, is definitely an added bonus. And we both watch a lot of golf, and sitting down having a beer after a round of golf at Long Reef one day, which is where we played back in Sydney, we'd been watching a lot of golf on TV and have the FedEx Cup and the rest of it with the point system. So we thought we'd, rather than just going, you won that day, or I won, or I don't win too many, but, we thought we'd put some points to throughout the year. So it's a calendar year where we bought a trophy and engraved it and the rest of it. So we're a bit of a couple of snuffs like this. But, and then put some points to it. Points for home victories being Long Reef, where we play 75 points or whatever away wins. So anywhere in Australia away from Long Reef. And then international points as well. So if we do manage to get to play on tour, which we do from time to time, thought that those would have to account to more points. So lost the first 2 years, managed to get myself on the board last year, and then we've had two rounds this year and it's one apiece. So both got some time off in April, so we've got some golf booked and I'm sure there'll be some big points on offer.
Okay, well, I'll put my hand up to carry bags, because I'd love to see this competition up close and personal. And apologies too, if everyone can hear sort of the banging in the background, is we're at the Junction Oval at the moment and it's a madhouse because the bushfire relief game has been changed from Sydney, the SCG, to the Junction Oval on Sunday. So,
there you go. I didn't know that either.
There you go. Yes. Just announced, because Sydney's going to be underwater.
I saw that. I've heard that anyway.
The irony of it all.
Massive. The Sixers, a nice little win there.
I can't help yourself, can you? Let's wrap up the golf. Could Elisa Healy play golf at a serious level, do you think?
I have to stop getting the grumps on when she's losing.
Captain Grumpy.
Well, you need if she's playing bad, you need to give her like 15 minutes and a beer after golf, and then she's good to go.
Then she's okay.
Now, she does hit the ball very well. She spent more time practicing. I guess if she put as much time practicing the golf as she does the cricket, you never know. Yeah. But she's playing off 7, so she's
it's handy.
Pretty handy golfer. She's giving me shots. I'm off 9, so... if she ever wants to go down that path and practice more and get down to scratch, I'm happy to carry the bag.
There we go. You heard it here first. The recording stopped when you were talking about your celebrations for the 2015 World Cup up on the roof. What's your role for this T20 Women's World Cup? Are you leader of celebrations if the Australian girls get through to the final and have a win?
Well, we're away. We pretty much head over to South Africa as it starts. I'll definitely be watching from afar.
You need to speak to a board member or something about changing that.
Yeah, I don't know about that. Yeah. What do you reckon? if the girls manage to make the final, which hopefully they do, playing at home, it's actually on the day that we're meant to fly back from South Africa. So
right, there we go.
Might have to do some rejigging there.
Works, okay.
be keeping a close eye on obviously how Elisa and the girls go. World Cups at home, they're very special and don't come around too often. So yeah, they're all really excited. Obviously, this tri-series is a big indicator of how the three teams will go. So yeah, I think that there's a lot of anticipation for the World Cup to start and hopefully come the final. It's a full house in Melbourne and Australia, they're playing whoever and hopefully lifting the trophy.
Have you noticed a difference in this squad, in this team over the last few years at all? I mean, you followed them around and watched them for many years now. You probably know them better than I do.
Yeah, I've been fortunate enough to watch them from time to time. We cross paths. But yeah, I think it was probably a change after the 2017 One Day World Cup in England, where they got knocked off in the semi-finals by India. I think they had a good debrief and good review of the tournament and where the team stood. And I think the rest of the women's team has probably caught up to Australia, who dominated for a long time. And they all sort of, a couple of them anyway, caught up to Australia there. And I think the reviews were definitely player-led from what I've pulled out of Elisa and don't ask
Matthew
too much.
Mott
or cry
said the
too
same.
Much,
it's okay.
but that's generally a good thing when the players lead that change or that review. And certainly since then they've jumped ahead again. I think the results in the Ashes over there just last year showed how they've pulled ahead again in definitely in all three formats. And the rest of the countries are trying to catch up again. So hopefully that's for their sake that's the way the World Cup goes. But yeah, there was definitely a change there after 2017 to how they approached all their cricket, not just in the one day game.
Is there a correlation also with Elisa's form as well from 2017 onwards?
Yeah, I think she took that without speaking to too many other girls, but I think Elisa herself probably took that quite personally, how the tournament went for them through that stage as well. Yeah, the last 2 years of her cricket, I think it has been pretty phenomenal with, hearing some of the numbers of how she's gone and some of the scores she's made, the 148 in T20 cricket, how she's applied herself in the different formats as well. I think, it's no surprise for me being able to see how she's worked behind the scenes. She's probably too humble to say that. She's not surprised or anything like that, but she does work really hard at her glove work and her batting, and it's certainly paid off over the last sort of 18 to 24 months. So hopefully she's got another big couple of months in her, and come April she can put her feet up and pick up the golf clubs and reflect on another good summer of cricket.
That sounds pretty good to me. When you look at the team as a collective, what stands out for you as being the most impressive thing about them?
Yeah, I think definitely not only since 2017, but I think that their ability to win home and away, I think it's something that certainly our team is very conscious of, is how tough it can be to win away from home. Certainly how India came back in that series just recently. We won the first game and they come back really strongly in the next two games playing at home. And not only India, but there's plenty of places where it's certainly harder to win away from home than it is at home. And the women's team have done that really successfully for a number of years now, and so I think that's something that they do phenomenally well is whether it's home or away, they're pretty dominant against all teams and have been for a long time. So that's something that certainly our team is striving to do, and they've led from the front for a long time.
Who you take Australia out of the equation now? Who are the dangers for them in this World Cup?
Well, I think England and India. I think the way this tri-series is set up is a great indicator of how all three teams are probably tracking heading into the World Cup. England are generally always there or thereabouts in both formats of the World Cup. India are a team that are continuing to improve. They've obviously knocked off Australia in the 2017 One Day World Cup and beat India. Beat England the other day in Canberra. So the three teams are certainly probably the top three ranked teams heading into the World Cup, and you always have a couple of smokies. Or I think South Africa just knocked off New Zealand for the first time over there, and so they'll be coming over with a lot of confidence. But T20 cricket, I think, is a format that brings everyone back to the pack, whether you're ranked number one or 10 or 15, whether it be you come in and have a phenomenal day out in the field. Anyone can knock off anyone, so it's certainly exciting. Hopefully, for the gear that I'm sitting in right now, Australia do really well. Yeah, I'm sure it'll be exciting for all the fans as well.
How do you feel having a New South Welsh woman / Australian coaching England as well?
Yeah, it's we actually walked past her in Canberra, and I'm not sure how she's sitting in how she feels sitting in the Pommy gear. They obviously had Trevor Bayliss coach England to a men's World Cup recently as well. So the Australians are running the show all around the world. But I'll probably a change whether they. I guess looking back on the Ashes, the English probably wanted a bit of a change there with how they've been tracking. So, Lisa might be a good change for them. But hopefully the Australian players are the ones who are lifting the trophy, not the Australian coach in Pommy clothing.
That sounds good to me. The MCG, there's been so much talk about it. We're ramping up now towards it. The hashtag fill the G. There was Hosier Lane, which is quite a famous laneway in Melbourne, has just been repainted street art-wise with Katy Perry and Elise Perry. It's all heading towards March 8. What would it mean for you personally to see the MCG packed to the rafters?
Yeah, it'd be phenomenal. I think there's been a lot of work done behind the scenes around social media, around pumping it up, and so it should be. It's a World Cup final. It's in Australia. It's the MCG. You know, I was fortunate enough to be a part of a World Cup final there, and the noise was incredible. So nothing that I've ever heard or been in front of before, and I think I was pretty much out of breath after that first over at the MCG. So for a number of reasons, but it'd be pretty special. I think not only the current group are definitely aware of how special it would be, but I think previous eras of women's cricket in Australia. You're part of that, Lisa Lake is part of that, and it's all sort of been building to something special like this. So, watching two world-class teams playing a World Cup final, you've got basically got a concert after it as well. Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't you want to be there? And hopefully there's 90,000 people there, 90,000 plus. And hopefully by the end of March 8, you've seen Australia pick up a World Cup trophy and you can enjoy a few cordials and watch a concert at the same time.
Sounds pretty good to me. I'm going to let you hit the gym because you've got more important things to do. One, a series in South Africa. Two, you've got to win the Steely Cup in April, wherever you may play. Good luck with that. And I've got a big job to do because I've got to go off and see if I can get you out of that game.
How's that? Thanks, Mel.
Does that sound good? Perfect. Mitch, thanks so much.
Thanks, Mel.
Want to witness the world's biggest football game? Head to iCanWin.com.au, predict Australia's score with a crystal ball, and it could be you and a friend at the FIFA World Cup Qatar 2022 semi-finals, all thanks to McDonald's. Maccas, together and loving it. TNCs apply.